This is Fresh Air. My guest, Johnetta Cole, headed the Clinton Transition Team's education group. She recently handed in the group's report, but she says she's not at liberty to talk about it. Cole is the first African-American woman president of Spelman College. The college was founded in 1881 to teach formerly enslaved women to read and write. Now this college for black women is the top liberal arts college in the South, according to this year's rankings of America's best colleges by U.S. News & World Report. Spelman is the model for the Cosby Show spinoff, A Different World. Cosby donated $20 million to Spelman. Johnetta Cole has been Spelman's president since 1987. She's written a new book called Conversations, Straight Talk with America's Sister President. I asked her if an African-American women's college like Spelman is free from racism and sexism.
I think it's very difficult for us to go anywhere in our nation, and in fact anywhere in our world, and find it a place totally free of racism and of sexism. But I can say that at a place like Spelman, and I talk about this in my book, that what is so incredibly exciting is that one senses what it can be like when we manage finally to get rid of those twin evils. No, I would not say that sexism has ceased to exist at Spelman, but I'd say it's in very poor health. I would not say that racism is nowhere to be found in and around Spelman, but I'd say that it has a hard row to hoe at that institution.
What changed for you after working at colleges that were, I suppose, predominantly white and also probably...
Co-ed.
Co-ed,
yes.
Yeah, but also probably predominantly male in terms of the faculty.
All of that is true.
Is there a certain kind of energy that you had to use to work against racist and sexist tendencies at those institutions that you don't have to use now? I mean, is there a difference?
Intriguing question. Let me just say that I think energy, in fact, is released. There is something that happens when you're in a setting where you feel valued, where you feel affirmed, where you're not spending an enormous amount of your time in defense of who you are, of what your gender is capable of doing, of who your people are. Spelman women describe this to me. I mean, they feel, at the risk of using a term that's a little rhetorical, liberated. That is, they're in a setting where no one dares to question, can you do physics? After all, you're a woman. No one would look at a class in mathematics at Spelman and say, now, girls, do the best you can.
When you were a college student, you started off at Fisk, an African-American college in Tennessee. You transferred from there eventually for Oberlin, a mixed, predominantly white college up north. Mm-hmm. What did you like and what didn't you like as, you know, being a student at an African-American college?
Well, the first thing I must remind myself of is that I was 15 years old.
That is awfully young for college.
Awfully young. And as I talk to students now who are thinking about early entrance programs, and just yesterday I was, or a few days ago, speaking with a student who was interested in doing early entrance to Spelman, I said, be careful, my young sister. You know, age does help us sometimes. I think I was very young. I also know that, as I talk about in my book, that was the year that my father passed. I was incredibly close to that wonderful man. And so I think I was leaving Fisk in part out of a need to be closer to my own family. My sister was already at Oberlin. But I remember Fisk so well. I remember the extraordinary intellectual excitement of being around people like Arne Bontemps, who was a writer and the librarian, of knowing that Aaron Douglas, the great muralist and artist, was in fact a member of my faculty. I turned on intellectually at Fisk. And interestingly, I think, I turned on to African-American intellectuals.
Now, when you were going to college at Fisk, you say it introduced you to a world of African-American intellectuals on a level you'd never known before, but the college was also very bourgeois and very status-conscious. Mm-hmm. What effect did that have on you?
Well, you know, I grew up in a household that I'm still trying to figure out. Maybe it's the nature of class in America, that it takes us a while to figure out exactly who we are. You know the joke that everybody in America says they're middle class. Well, I grew up in a household that was clearly not poor. I grew up in a household that had more means than most African Americans who would describe themselves as middle class, and perhaps more means even than some white Americans, who, that is, material means, who would describe themselves as middle class. But race always plays with our socioeconomic background. And so although I grew up in a household that most would say was of the prominent black family of Jacksonville, I never thought of myself as rich. I certainly knew that I was not poor. What I could say about my family is that it wasn't deeply involved in a lot of material stuff. It was there. I'm very grateful that I grew up in a household where there were books and music, classical and jazz. But there wasn't a great emphasis on acquire this, wear the right kind of clothes. I experienced at Fisk some of that emphasis on things that do have to do with status. And I'm saying this not necessarily as a criticism, but as a description. And I also would say it as a way of helping us to understand how important all of that was to African Americans of that period. That is, a folk trying to establish themselves, trying to go against stereotypes, trying to wipe out images of African Americans, all of whom come of a given socioeconomic standing.
My guest is Jonetta Cole, president of Spelman College. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jonetta Cole, and she's the president of Spelman College, the author of a new book called Conversations. She's also the education coordinator of the Clinton Transition Team. Your great-grandfather founded the first black insurance company in Florida, and you described it as the most prominent black family in Jacksonville. Everyone knew who you were when you were growing up. Did you grow up with a sense of responsibility to represent the family name or to represent the race?
The answer is certainly yes. I was thinking a little earlier today about a phrase that was often used, and I think I use this phrase in the book. Folk of a given generation were called race men and race women. That is, these were individuals who were representing the race, who often thought about issues that had to do with the race. And so I grew up in an environment of deep racial pride, where there was a sense that how one behaved and how one carried oneself reflected not only on you, but on an entire people.
The African American branch of the library in Jacksonville was named after your grandfather. It was the A.L.
Lewis. My great-grandfather.
It was the A.L. Lewis Library. What did it feel like to take out a book from a library named after your great-grandfather, or to sit there reading that book?
A mixture of pride and real disappointment and hurt.
Pride
that it was named after Fafa, as I affectionately called him. But after all, our library didn't have as many books as the downtown library, and we knew that. And in fact, when we looked inside of our books, we could sometimes still see the plates, the identification plates from the downtown library. We knew that we got the hand-me-downs. That was the nature of being black, or as one would often say, colored, in Jacksonville, Florida, in that period of time.
I want to go back to the time right after the Rodney King verdict.
Mm-hmm.
What happened on your campus? Did your students go out in the streets? Did you talk to them about that?
Oh, the Rodney King situation was the most difficult, I think, for me, of all situations since I've been at Spelman. The reason I say that is because I really did understand the outrage that our students felt. And I mean not just the women at Spelman, but at the other institutions in the Atlanta University Center. These students were, to say upset is too mild. On the other hand, I was so aware of my responsibilities as a college president, as the leader of an institution, to keep a degree of rationality and of calm. Not for the sake of calm and rationality, but because ultimately I knew that that was really in the interest of those students themselves. Following the verdict, students in the Atlanta University Center did, in fact, begin to demonstrate their concerns and their outrage. And I'm very proud of the fact that although the sentiment was deep, although the outrage was heavy, I would say that of the 10,000 students in the Atlanta University Center schools, probably no more than 100 students actually, as one would put it, took to the streets. And when I look at the violence of that verdict, after all, we watched Rodney King being beaten on television. When I look at the violence of that verdict, and then I look at what those students did, I think in some ways they were really quite calm. They were really quite rational in their insistence on saying in some way, we are profoundly hurt. We are deeply disappointed. We thought that things had changed in our nation.
Now, I read an article that said that you decided not to either cancel exams or postpone them a few days. How closely were the exams scheduled to the verdict?
Very close. That is, following the 2 or 3 days, no more really than 2 full days in which Atlanta University Center students did demonstrate, we were immediately into the reading period and into exams. And it was a tough decision. But the reason that I made it in the way that I did was that I was able to stand up in front of Spelman students and say, my sisters, here is a perfect example of what I think life is like for all of us. We've got to do 2 and 3 important things at the same time. If you must demonstrate, do so, but please know that you also have the responsibility to study well and to do these exams. Unfortunately, life doesn't come with one task at a time.
Was there a period before you made that decision in which you thought, maybe I should postpone the exam so that...
Oh, the pressure was heavy. I mean, yeah. The sisters had organized. They had come to say, surely, Sister President, you're not going to have us go through these exams. But, you know, let me be clear in saying that decisions that are made like that are not made in isolation. I work with an exceptional senior staff, a group of vice presidents and a provost who sit and we take each other's counsel. I also talked at length with the other presidents of the Atlanta University Center institutions, and there's nothing quite like good counsel. Even if the decision is wrong, better you've made it with a lot of folk.
When you look at your students now and look at their goals, their needs, their insecurities, their problems, how do you think that compares to your needs, your insecurities, your problems, your ambitions when you were a student yourself?
I think it is a lot tougher to be a young African-American woman today than when I grew up.
Why is that? Because officially there's a lot more opportunities now, not to mention integration in the South.
Isn't that the case? But the complexity of the lives that these young women must live. I mean, take something as basic as AIDS. You know, I think it's hard to overstate what it means to be a young person, to be in a period of growth, including of sexual growth or of sexuality. And to have AIDS confront one. I think it's tougher now to be an African American because, in fact, the civil rights movement did happen, because the black liberation movement did happen, and yet racism is still here. I think the fact that the opportunities appear to be so much more available, and yet one can look at one's own life and say, but it hasn't happened yet for me, makes it even more difficult for these young folk. And certainly on the gender question, I think the fact that we have made progress, that young women feel their own strengths and possibilities, and yet our society hasn't worked out all of those kinks and in particular, the young men with whom they interact, are not yet quite sure about all of these newfounded opportunities for these young women. I have enormous respect for the young women of Spelman. I have an enormous amount of respect for the young women of our country and the young men too, because I think life is even more complicated for them than it was for my generation.
Johnetta Cole, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Johnetta Cole is the president of Spelman College and author of the new book, Conversations, Straight Talk with America's Sister President. This is Fresh Air.